There's actually another important difference with the European Union, in which the patentee can still obtain an injunction if it does not comply with all the steps, as long as the alleged infringer also does not comply with all the steps. In that case, you balance who did the most wrong and give the injunction to the person who did the least wrong. So it's a more flexible framework. There are less requirements for the patentee. And it's arguably, one of the, maybe the easiest jurisdiction, major jurisdiction to get an injunction as a SEP holder.
So clearly there has been standards essential patent and FRAN litigation in a variety of jurisdictions around the world. Are there any specific or special considerations for multi-jurisdictional litigation?
Yes, there are considerations for multi-jurisdiction. It's possible for the U.S. court. I think it's the next slide. It's possible for a court to issue an anti-suit injunction, which is a somewhat extraordinary procedure that's rarely granted, where a U.S. court can halt a proceeding in another jurisdiction, either halt the actual proceeding or halt the injunction that issued in another proceeding. One recent example is the Huawei versus Samsung case. In January 2018, a Chinese court granted an injunction in that case on SEP patents. In April 2018, Judge Orrick in the Northern District of California issued an anti-suit injunction, temporarily halting that injunction until parallel U.S. claims are resolved. It was a very fact-specific decision, and the Ninth Circuit actually has less restrictive law than other circuits on this topic, related to the timing of the lawsuits as well as the merits of the cases. In that case, the plaintiff had actually filed the case in China on the same day, but because of the differences in the world, one day later. So, and the court relied on the fact that the Chinese case had been filed one day later in determining that it should issue an anti-suit injunction.
So, given the range of differences we've seen here, is it fair to say that in spite of those differences, that if you are an accused standards essential patent infringer, as long as you make clear that you're willing to take a license and to negotiate for a fair, reasonable, and non-discriminatory royalty, that you probably ought to be able to avoid an injunction in all of these jurisdictions?
Yes, but the one caveat is to make sure to check the specific requirements. In the EU, it requires a written counteroffer. There are some specifics there, so wherever you are, dig into the details and make sure that you actually give the appropriate counteroffer. But in that case, you should be able to avoid an injunction.
And don't rely on your cat to negotiate for you?
No. Or your dog.
Well, let's talk about FRAN royalties and the various approaches that courts and parties have taken towards assessing what a fair, reasonable, and non-discriminatory royalty actually ought to be.
So what approaches are there to assess a FRAN royalty?
Well, there are several, and I'm going to talk about them separately, but don't take away from this that they're actually necessarily used separately. Sometimes they are all discussed in a single opinion. They should all be considered, I think, if you're involved in these kinds of negotiations, and to some extent they may be considered complementary. There's a bottom-up approach, which looks at the incremental value that the particular patents that are being licensed contribute and doesn't focus on the broader picture. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. There's also a top-down approach, which, as the name suggests, is the opposite and looks at the broader picture first. And then there's the more traditional Georgia-Pacific factors and some particular approaches to how they need to be modified for standards essential patents. And including in the FRAN setting, but also even in the non-FRAN setting. And I'm going to talk about each of those approaches. So the bottom-up approach for royalties, as I said, focuses on the value of these particular patents. What is the technology that the patents that are at issue that you're trying to license or are seeking to take a license for contributes to the standard overall? And you don't look to other standards, other patents that cover the technology in the standard, but you do look to the other technologies that are present in the standard and what portion of the overall standard is provided by the patents at issue. How important is it? Is it a core feature or an optional feature or maybe a peripheral feature that's not optional but not so critical to the operation of the standard? And it's common, although not necessarily required, that you will look at comparable licenses, in other words, licenses for similar technology, to establish what might be an appropriate FRAND rate.